Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. I am Ken Edwards with the National Coalition of Labor. Sitting to my right is Ed Maher with the National Coalition of Labor. Good morning, Ed.
What's happening, Ken?
Everything's good. Everything's really good. Sunday morning. Before I forget, because I always forget, I'm going to start with, Ed, a shout-out to the listener of the week.
Oh, we're doing it up front. I like
right
it.
Right up front, because I always forget. I have them written down, and by the end of the show, I just forget. So, Dorothy, you are the listener of the week. I had a great conversation with Dorothy the other day. She is the spouse of a proud retired Local 134 member.
Okay.
And she called me about, I forget what it was, one of our benefits for the coalition, like I think it was roadside assistance or whatnot. And more lately than not, Ed, when people call, they say, "Are you that guy on the radio?" Right. I'm like, "Yeah, I'm one of them." And but she was really, really nice. We talked for quite some time, and she listens to the show and is a big supporter. So shout out to Dorothy. So I was thinking about you yesterday because I went to Costco.
Did you get a hot dog?
I certainly did.
And
here's my story. You ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
I haven't been to Costco in a long time. And even though I'm a member, and why am I a member? Because the coalition has a great discount. If you are a coalition member and you're listening out there, and you haven't been a member of Costco for 18 months and want to restart it, you get $20 off, I think, the regular membership, and then I think it's $40 off the fancy membership.
Right.
But, you know, hey, money's money. And Costco, you know, good company, pays their employees, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, go to Costco, and the very first thing I do is, like, I have to immediately get a hot dog for Ed.
Yeah.
So I walk up.
It's weird that that's what makes you think of me, but I'll take it.
I walked up to the hot dog thing, and, you know, Rachel went into the main store, and I'm like, I just walk up and, like, you know, like, a hot dog, please. The woman says to me, "Do you have exact change?" And it's still, like you said, $1.50. You get a hot dog and soda. I'm like, "I don't." She's like, "Oh, well, then you have to order over there." I'm like, "What do you mean?" She's like, you see those machines over there?" I'm like, "Yeah." "You have to order over there and then come back and pick it up." And the machines are literally, like, about 2 feet away from
right.
where I was. And I look around, and I haven't been in Costco in a long time, and I realize there is a third of the employees behind the counter, and everybody's ordering from a machine. And I'm like, "Et tu Costco?" Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. Like, you can't take you can't break a $20 bill. Like, you got cash. Like,
yeah.
And so, I don't know. I was bummed out about that. And then I ate the hot dog, and I was angry.
You were angry after eating the hot dog?
No, I was just angry that I had to go, like, I had to walk over there, use the stupid kiosk, order my hot dog, walk back 3 feet, and go, "Order number 127? Like, come on, just hire some more people back there. Anyway, I was angry about the hot dog situation, and I would implore them to hire more hot dog vendors, if you will. Let's stop replacing jobs with machines.
Well, I went to it was months ago before my boycott started of Portillo's,
right.
but they started using those, and there was nobody in there,
yeah.
And there was a guy behind the counter, and he points at the machine. And it's like, what, you know, like, do you realize what you're doing here? You're telling someone to do the thing that
you
eliminates
do.
Your job.
Yes.
Like, you're training your machine replacement.
Yeah.
But seriously, you want to talk about something that makes you feel like venture capital hot dogs, go to Portillo's and see the kiosk. Not your, you know, not the old school that we liked. But anyway, I'm a little biased here.
Don't go to Portillo's, period.
Because well, that's for
hot
sure.
Dog, hot dog stand trying to overturn the constitutionality of the National Labor Relations
Worker Board. Hating hot dogs.
Yes, and same thing with Trader Joe's.
That's right.
Right? Trader Joe's, Amazon, Starbucks, et cetera.
SpaceX.
Ridiculous. All right, listen, we have a cool show for you today. We're going to be talking, obviously, about the Boeing workers rejecting
big
the
news.
Contract. Yeah, really, really big news. And then we have Jim Connolly is an attorney, young attorney that works for the laborers, and he's teaching a class, which, by the way, everybody's listening, you're welcome to go to, on Saturdays at University of Illinois, but the Chicago location
right.
about labor law and things like that. So we'll be talking about that as well. And then a couple other quick things, but we'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher with the National Coalition of Labor here with Ken Edwards from the NCL.
Hey, before we get into the Boeing thing, I just want to say that I heard you on Wednesday evening.
The Worker Wednesdays.
It's the second one, right?
Yeah.
And it was really, really cool. Tell everybody about that.
So around 6 o'clock on Wednesdays here on WGN, John Hansen has a show, Your Money Matters, and he is... a fan of our show, and we appreciate him. And so I'm a fan of his show. I'm a fan of him.
Yeah.
And I go on for a few minutes and just talk about what's going on in the world of sort of working people, organized labor.
And then you got to give a little teaser for this show, the upcoming show.
Right.
And so, this is brought to you by our newest sponsor,
United Healthcare.
It's awesome.
That's right. So
yeah, it was really, really cool. I listened to it. Like, you sounded like really professional. Like, you actually knew what you're talking about.
Yeah, real newsman.
if this coalition thing doesn't work out for
my,
you,
my Monday to Friday personality is much different than my Sunday morning personality, where I'm just still sitting here thinking about Costco hot dogs.
But was cool. It was super cool. So if you get a chance, listen to, what do they call it, Worker Wednesdays?
Yeah,
6 o'clock ish. Right.
Yeah, it's like 6:05.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it was interesting because when we were on doing that,
yeah,
the Boeing employees,
that's right, they were voting.
Still, yeah, they were still in the process of voting. The voting didn't close, I think, until
you said 5. It was going to be close.
Yeah. So when I went on, it was like, well, that Boeing thing is settled, and I was like, well, they're voting right now, and from what we're seeing, there are a lot of members who are saying we're not supporting this deal, and it came as a surprise, I think, to a lot of folks who were watching this because. The offer from Boeing was somewhere in the neighborhood of 35% net, between benefits and things like that, over, I want to say, a 3-year or 4-year proposed contract.
I think they also gave like a $7,000 signing bonus.
Yeah, there were bonuses, there were performance bonuses, there were wage increases, and then there were increased contributions to the 401k for employees.
Right.
And this is Boeing trying to make up for the fact that they wiped out the pension plan years and years ago. So the pension plan was a sticking point for a lot of the employees at Boeing and a reason to go on strike. So the fact that they didn't get that back and, when the tentative agreement was reached, a week and a half ago, it sounded like leadership thought that this deal would get voted up by the members, but
I think they did not. If I'm not mistaken, this is what I read, that leadership in that local didn't take a position. They said, here is the offer.
Right.
We're not recommending you vote it up. We're not recommending you vote it down. Mm-hmm. Here's the offer.
Well, also, and
which
I
is,
think
that's unique.
Right. And this is something else that's also telling is in many cases in strikes that I've been involved with, if a proposal from the employer is a good one and you reach a tentative agreement that's got to be voted on by the members,
right.
They go back to work pending the approval of the members. Boeing employees did not go back to work. So they were still out and are still out, of course, because the strike continued. But
by the way, it was a smart move.
Opinion. So I think so. So that night they come to find out that I think with a margin of 64%, Boeing's employees rejected the offer, and the pension was a big part of it. The workers said, we're out. We're out on the street. We're out on strike. We're doing this, and we shouldn't give in for anything less than sort of what we're entitled to. And it's an interest. The whole dynamic here is so interesting because Boeing has had a lot of problems lately, and over the course of the strike, as the strike has worn on, they have reported a $6 billion loss for their quarter.
Right.
They said that they're going to have to lay off 10% of their staff. So after reaching this tentative agreement, they had said that the layoffs were not related to the strike. They were just, they were overstaffed.
Sure.
The CEO came out and said, we're overstaffed, and there's no relation to
and he's overpaid. How about that?
Right. But this whole $6 billion thing, it was used as, and I saw, various news outlets say, these workers have crippled Boeing, which has just reported a $6 billion loss. Over the past, 7 years, I want to say, Boeing has put almost $50 billion of its money into stock buybacks. Now, what does that mean? The company takes its assets,
right,
uses it to buy back huge chunks of stock,
right,
which drives up the price of the stock, puts more money in its investors' pockets, and generally makes the company look like it's doing better than it is, especially in this case, because what it did was it took resources that the company had and emptied the bank accounts. They had money.
So instead of using it for, I don't know, keeping the door on your plane?
Well, right. Or having, you know, prudent reserves in case you had a bad quarter or if the door flew off the plane.
Right.
Because there was, you know, in the past couple of weeks, the CEO has made a couple of different remarks in different locations. And one of them was that he recognized that the public had lost its confidence in Boeing over the quality issues and the doors flying off and things like that. So he talked about this $6 billion loss and the challenges facing the company and put it in the context of this isn't about striking workers. Striking workers didn't do this. You know, a loss of public confidence due to design flaws, the fact that they haven't designed a new plane in all these years. Like they have a lot of challenges. And it's like, well, we're gonna face them. I don't know if Wall Street's buying it. I think the voting down of the contract certainly didn't help instill public confidence. But all of these things sort of put together really do paint the picture that this the woes of Boeing, woeing Boeing, is not due to the workers being on strike. And as if to further illustrate that, General Motors reported its own revenue this week.
Right.
And their revenue increased by 10%, like their quarterly revenue, which is kind of funny because their sales only went up by 5%.
Hmm.
So if I'm scratching my head wondering that, I think they might be overpricing their cars. But I'm just, I don't know, I might be wrong. But it was...
they don't make cars anymore, by the way. They're trucks.
Just SUVs, I know. But they beat estimates, and they're actually on course for a record year for revenue in 2024.
Didn't they just take a big strike?
They paid out a lot of money to their employees last year in the big three UAW strike.
Yeah.
And analysts were saying, oh, these workers are going to cripple their companies. Well, in your face, analysts, because this goes to show that if a company is well run, you can have employees that make money and that are well taken care of, and you can have record years of profit, too. You can have both, you know, if you just run the thing right. Now, if you're Boeing and you want to take all the money that you have and find a sort of a weird way to buy stock and put the money back in your CEO's pockets, put it back in the board's pockets, all of your investors' pockets, and then you hit a bump in the road and there's no money left in the bank. That's, you know, and you try to sort of blame that on your workers. Shame on you. I'm going to do a Ken Edwards and I'm going to say shame on you.
I like it.
But that's the story. So Boeing, you know, we're going to have to wait and see what the next proposal looks like. The workers are clearly serious about this.
I think they're back at the table, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I had read, Ed, was, you know, you hear like, oh my God, 35%, that's a massive amount of money and a $7,000 increase in 401ks and blah, blah, blah.
There's benefits,
and,
there's all these things.
Like, oh my gosh, these greedy, you know, workers. Don't forget, though, see, everything is in, like, in today's, I don't know, media world or short attention span world, nobody has any context,
right?
And so just take this for a quick second. The context is this. Boeing land, like you said, they took all their money, they spent it on stock buybacks, right? And for 10 years, a decade, those employees' wages have been flat.
They're the machinist, an average machinist working for Boeing in the state of Washington makes $42,000 a year.
So are you serious?
If you're thinking that these people are smoking cigars and lighting them with $100 bills.
$42,000.
Yeah, they're lighting cigarettes with, you know, lighters.
matches. Like, they can't buy lighters.
Well, I don't know. You probably can't afford cigarettes.
Yeah,
that's
a good point, too. Shouldn't be smoking anyway.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. That is, So anyway.
The big bad workers are not so big. They're not so bad.
And you know what? Good for them. Stand up. You know, don't give in. Now's the time. Get your pension back, right? Which is really, really, really important. Worth its weight in gold. Absolutely worth its weight in gold. Like, I would trade wages for pension contributions. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, kudos to those guys for doing the right thing and that union for standing up. You know, the machinists are strong, right? They got a bunch of machinists here in Chicagoland.
Yeah, they call themselves the Fighting Machinists.
I know, I love that.
Local 126, it's Ryan Kelly and that group there.
Yeah, 701 is mechanics, right?
Yeah.
Those are machinists as well. You know, they've
gone on strike in the past. I mean, they're not afraid to do what
they
have to do.
I think they have like 600,000 members in their international, if I'm not mistaken. That's what I read. And
it's a big local, or big union.
It's a big union, absolutely, and a smart one, too. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, that's interesting. What else we got?
The WNBA opted out of its collective bargaining agreement, which, you know, I think they see that.
So it's the WNBA Players Association.
The Players Association, correct,
not the WNBA union itself.
Yeah, the union that represents the players exercised its right to opt out of the contract. And
so what does that mean? I don't understand that.
They have the right, and this happens, it seems to happen a lot in professional sports, but they're going back to renegotiate their collective bargaining agreement. And why would they do that? Because this time last year, everybody was talking about how Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and these sort of newfound stars were going to be going in the number one, number two, number three picks in the draft and earning a salary of like $75,000 a year, despite the insane amount of money that they were generating for TV stations and advertisers and things like that.
That's like the NCAA Final Four was like watched more than the men's.
For sure. Right. Yeah, I watched a lot of those games.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I watched, frankly, a lot of WNBA games at home with the family. Mm-hmm. And people wondered, like, is this going to be a blip? Is this going to continue? Are people going to stay engaged? Or is this going to be like the Hawk to a Girl where it just disappears after 2 weeks?
And by the way, thank God.
Yeah, she's got a podcast called Talk to a. She's probably got more listeners than we do. Preserve your brain cells. but I think what we saw this year was that viewership was up, attendance was up, jerseys were up. So these ladies of the WNBA Players Association, the players and the teams, they're doing well. They're being successful. They see an opportunity to get a piece of the pie for themselves, and we should support them in doing it.
Of course, we should. We should absolutely support them. You also talked about this Sony, saying like, "I told you, writers and actors, you shouldn't have went on strike. Now we have to film in Eastern Europe."
Well, the CEO of Sony Pictures says at an industry event in Cannes. In one of the most luxurious, opulent places on the planet.
Right, not even in America, by the way.
He says, I warned these unions what would happen.
I told you.
Yeah, I told these unions that if you do this, you're going to drive the industry out of America. You're going to send it to low-wage places like Eastern Europe. And my thought on it off the top of my head was like, oh, so if workers don't agree to be replaced by robots, they're going to take the jobs to another country. If you're one of those workers, it's like, oh, you're going to replace me with a robot, or you're going to take the job somewhere else.
Right.
Well, whatever. I'm going to call your bluff, and because I don't think either one of those things is going to happen. Plus, let me just say, there's a lot of weird stuff on Netflix that's coming from other countries now, where it's like dubbed, or the production value is really, really weird.
No question.
Or it's people pretending to be like American actors, but they're clearly not American. And I see this and I'm like, I'm not watching this.
I immediately turn it off.
Yeah, this is
something is dubbed or whatever, or it's like, hey, welcome to sunny California. And it's like, dingy, Eastern European city somewhere.
Yeah, it's like, why is there a statue of V.I. Lenin in the beach in Venice? Yeah,
there's not a single palm tree.
Yeah. Welcome to California. That's my Arnold Schwarzenegger. I didn't even know I was going to do that.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. But the Sony Pictures guy is saying all this stuff, and it just rings hollow to me because ultimately
it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And guess what, Sony? You start doing that stuff, guess what? I won't watch it. It's that simple. I will not watch it.
Disney started its own streaming service and gave it away for free to everybody for a year.
Smart.
And then charged everybody. And people are like, I don't want to pay for this. I don't feel like watching Star Wars 15. And then they're just like, oh, well, that's the writer's fault.
Yeah.
Like, no, you guys are cannibalizing each other with these streaming networks. And once again, trying to blame it on the workers. So we've got to take a break. But before we do, I just want to say, I'm going to do a twofer this week. I'm not only doing a one-fer, I'm doing a twofer on the shame on you to Sony CEO of Sony Pictures.
What's his name?
I forget. It's Italian. I have nothing.
I think it's Mr. Sony.
Mr. Sony?
Yeah.
Joe Sony? Joe Sony.
Shame on you.
Shame on you.
Yeah.
We'll be back right after this with more Workers' Mike here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mike, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. Ken, Ed, welcome. Jim Connolly. Jim Connolly, you are an attorney with the laborers, right?
Yeah, business representative and an attorney with the laborers.
So let's talk 2 seconds about your background, and then let's talk about why you're here. You went to Chicago Kent, correct, for law school?
I did, yeah. Graduated in 2017.
Okay, and before that, where'd you go to college?
Undergrad at University of Illinois in Champaign.
And they have a massive labor program, correct?
They do. I was a political science major, and I got my minor in the global labor studies program.
Okay.
They also offer a master's degree in human resources and industrial relations through their labor and employment relations school. It's pretty successful.
Really successful. Do you have to stay an extra year to take that, or can you take that while you're in undergrad?
The master's program?
Yeah.
I think you have to stay.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm. So, all right. And so you went to undergrad there, and then you go to Kent. And Chicago Kent has also a massive, like probably one of the best in the country, labor programs, correct?
Yeah.
Like them in Cornell, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe the top four that I can think of are Kent, mm-hmm. Cornell, yeah. Harvard, and Michigan.
How do you like that?
And Northeastern.
How do you like that? Yeah, Northeastern, that's right. That's yeah. That's in Boston, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. So you went to Kent, right?
I did.
And then you came and worked at our home local, at Local 150.
I did.
And how long were you there?
As a law clerk during school, I had a couple of stints throughout my time in law school, and then once I graduated, I worked there for about 4 years as associate general counsel.
As an attorney?
Yes.
Okay. And then you made the move over to back to the laborers. And actually, I say back to the laborers. You come from a labor family.
I do, yeah. Fourth generation card-carrying member of
wow.
the laborers.
Awesome. Love it.
Local 4.
Love it. And so then you went to work for Local 4?
Yes.
Okay. And how long have you been there?
Over 3 years now.
Okay. And
it's flown by.
How big is Local 4's membership?
Over 1,400 members.
Okay.
And it's part of the, like, the laborers are set up differently than us, right? They're district council, correct?
Yes.
What is it called, Chicago?
It's the Construction and General Laborers District Council of Chicago and Vicinity. It's a mouthful.
And you've got, 14 locals just around Chicagoland?
Yeah.
How many members total?
Around 23,000.
Yeah. Massive,
yeah, right? For sure. Big, powerful union.
Very. And so the reason that you're here today is to talk about, and we've had on the air, Ed, we've had Bob Bruno from University of Illinois here
several
before,
times.
Right? Just super, super, like,
friend of the show.
Every time he's on, I learn something.
For sure.
Like, I thought Labor Day was like, yeah, Labor Day. And he's like, no, absolutely not. Labor Day was like a Hallmark holiday for union workers, which I swear to God, up until last year, I didn't know this. And so, so Bob Bruno is, what is he? He's the head of the University of Illinois.
Institute of Labor and Industrial Relations and the Chicago Labor Education Program, I think.
So he does a lot of work, obviously, both in Champaign, but he also has programs up here in Chicagoland, correct?
Yeah, his office is up here.
And so you are teaching a class, and so I want to talk about that. What's the class?
The University of Illinois has a labor education program through their School of Labor and Employment Relations.
Okay.
It's just known as the labor education program for union members, union representatives, and just workers trying to expand their general knowledge. This is the labor law certificate program.
Okay. And what does that mean?
So the program consists of 6 Saturday classes that are about 6 hours each plus a lunch break. And each class is a different theme or subject. So day one is private sector labor law,
okay,
which we go into talking about the National Labor Relations Act right. and private sector employees, federal labor rights.
Yes.
The next day would be public sector labor law for public employees in the state and at the federal level. And then the next 2 days go into employment law with wage and hour and mm-hmm. employment discrimination.
Right.
And the last 2 days is kind of a legal writing, just improving general writing skills.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So what, like, how long have you been doing? This is your second year?
It's our second year.
Okay. And who do you teach it with?
I myself and one of my best friends, Joe Sweeney, who is currently a senior policy advisor for the wage and hour division of the U.S. Department of Labor.
Da, 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 da.
He used to be an attorney.
Shout out to Joe.
Shout out, Joe.
Used to be an attorney? He got disbarred?
No, he's still an attorney. No. He used to be an attorney with the Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa Foundation for Fair Contracting, which yes. is the labor management arm of the operators Local 150.
Yes. Remind me, so you do this class, right? And who takes the class? Like, tell me, like,
I took the class. I'm a graduate of the program.
Is that right?
Yeah, I took it back in 2006, 2007.
How many different classes are there, Jim?
I think there's like 5 or 6 different programs.
And what do you get? Do you get like a certificate?
If you attend all the classes, uh-huh. you'll get a certificate.
Okay.
Yeah, I have something that says University of Illinois Ed Maher, which I use rather than my NIU Ed Maher, which is in a drawer somewhere. So.
I should get one of those.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm not a juris doctor, but I'm at least like a nurse.
Isn't that
true?
And like, what do they call it? Emeritus?
Something like that.
Something like that? Like an honorary degree?
Those are tough to get.
You know who got one?
I've looked into this.
Cindy Lauper got one from Queens College, my alma mater.
Yeah?
Yeah, she's really cool. So anyway, so fun fact. Not really fun fact. So you teach this class, and this is your second year doing it. So tell me, who takes the class? Like, what does the student body look like?
So it's open to the public, and last year I think we had 23 or 24 students. There was only one person that signed up for the private sector labor law class and then didn't finish the program. Everybody else who takes it, you know, the public can sign up. Mm-hmm. It's for workers who want to expand their knowledge. A lot of union representatives have signed up to take it.
Sure.
Shop stewards have signed up. Yep. And also some public agency employees, like EEOC employees, have taken it.
Okay.
Illinois Department of Human Rights.
And so how much does it cost?
$600 for one individual to sign up and take the program.
Okay.
If you want to take an individual class, if you're not interested in doing the whole program, it's $150. Mm-hmm. And there's a union group rate for five or more students for $500 per person.
Well, I know when I was at Local 150, they had put out to the whole staff a couple years ago, probably, let us know if you'd like to take this, and the union would cover it. Because I think it's in the best interest to have a really well-informed staff. So
of course,
if you're a union member or a union staff member and you're interested in this, check with your union, see if they'll help out with that.
That's a good point. And so when does the class start? Like, when does it start?
First day of this session starts Saturday, November 2nd.
All right.
And then
Time's of the essence.
Yeah, and you can still sign up, correct?
You can still sign up. You can sign up until the day before.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Where would you sign up?
If you go to the Labor Law Certificate Program website, it's lep.illinois.edu/union-worker-education.
Of course. Are you joking?
Education with two
N's? It's a long URL. If you just Google Labor Education Program.
We'll put it on our Facebook page. Yeah. Check. Go on Facebook and look for the Workers' Mic, and we'll have a link to it there.
That's a good idea. And it's at Van Buren and Halstead in Chicago, right?
Correct.
And what time does it start?
8 a.m.
8 a.m. Saturday mornings.
Yes.
How long does it go?
Till about 3.
Okay. And you get a little break, couple breaks and lunch.
Yeah, you get a couple of breaks. You get a lunch break. Joe and I will bring coffee and, you know, whether bagels or muffins or something.
Oh, that's nice.
So you don't start on an empty stomach.
Yeah.
The following Saturday is the second class, and then we don't resume again until February.
Oh, for the holidays?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Okay.
Well, one of the things that I always thought was so beneficial about the program, the one that I went through, was you not only learn a lot, but you're also meeting sort of other people within the labor movement who are really, really hungry for knowledge and looking to do a lot of good. So the networking is tremendous.
It really is. Last year we had a lot of people from a lot of different organizations. So, mm-hmm. you know, my experience doesn't involve a lot of public sector labor law when I was at the operators. It was mostly private sector.
And I was vice versa.
Right.
Yeah.
So we encourage all the students in the class to learn through their own anecdotes too. So, you know, if we're trying to explain one aspect of the law, they want to try to make sure they understand it. So they'll bring up a story or an example from their own experience.
Sure.
And it helps everybody else in the class learn.
Right.
It's really cool how it works. And you grow a lot more respect for the other labor organizations too.
Do you mean? Explain that.
So, you know, for example, if you had somebody from the Service Employees International Union in the class,
My mom and dad, lifelong members.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest unions, if not the biggest in the country.
It is.
Hearing about people that work in the service industry and their experiences about, you know, harassment or being cheated out of their contract.
For sure.
You grow a stronger appreciation for the structure or your experiences that you've had, like you have it okay, you know, comparatively speaking.
You make a really good point. Like, we've had Karen Kent on from Unite Here, mm-hmm. and she tells like these horror stories of, you know, her members like going into the hotel rooms to clean and the harassment that they, what are they,
I think
like,
it was
hands off, pants on, or
yeah,
something
it was,
like
it
that.
Was hands off, pants on, pants on, something yes. like that. It was, yes. they had to pass something in the city of Chicago to protect these workers from, because I think it was two out of every three room, roommates, I guess, in a hotel in the city of Chicago had been victim to some sort of an unwelcome advance. When they knock on the door, nobody says anything, they go in to clean the room and there's somebody in there. I mean, what a, and that's another sort of example of what you're saying, where you don't think about that when you think of, you know, people who work in hotels. You hear what they're up against and what the kind of hassles they have to put up with, and you find new respect for them.
Yeah, 100%. And when I was still in law school, I had an internship working for Karen at Unite Here Local 1.
Oh, no way.
As a legal and organizing
intern. You've been
everywhere. Yeah. I've bounced around.
You're a man of a lot of great experience.
Literally a journeyman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've bounced around. And that ordinance they were trying to pass at the time I was working there, mm-hmm. And I believe Sarah Lyon was the representative from Unite Here that was her baby, trying to help out all of those members that experienced that sort of harassment and abuse. And those stories were horrifying. I think there was a commercial cut for it, too.
Yeah,
there was.
Where labor leaders were reading stories about what had happened. And you have labor leaders that were tearing up because they have daughters and they have, you know, nieces and they have wives who they're understanding that, you know, they wouldn't, how they would feel if somebody that they knew was put in a position like that.
You make a good point, though, Jim. It's like, you know, people in the, you know, the building trades, you know, I've always said, like, we're our own best kept secret, and B, we got a good gig. Like, we make good money. We go to work, right? Work hard. You don't really have to deal with a lot of that kind of stuff. Like, you know, it's just obviously things happen on a job site, whatever. I'm not saying it's easy, but there's not a lot of, like, look, nobody's, like, has their pants down on the job site. I mean, every once in a while.
I mean, I'm sure it's happened.
But, it's not the same.
Right. And, no question.
And you're not making $15 an hour. Or twenty, whatever it is. So
something you say a lot on this show, Ken, and I'm a firm believer in it, is that there's dignity in all work.
I actually got that from you.
I know you did. I was trying to be generous, but there's dignity in every job.
Right.
You know, the hardest working person on earth is probably one of the lowest paid people. And hearing some of these stories, you really start to appreciate that. And you look at other workers, especially lower wage workers, as having a lot more in common with you than you would have thought.
Oh, we all have something in common. If you're working, you have something in common. We have a lot more in common than we do, you know, not in common.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a phrase for that. But what made you decide to teach this class? Like why did you decide to do that? To work on a Saturday morning at the crack of dawn?
You know, I've talked to my wife, and I don't know if it's more because I like hearing myself talk or here, I just like
here,
to
here.
Teach.
I'm always surrounded by you guys.
I just like to teach. That is, you know, all of my mentors in this labor movement bringing me up through undergrad have been my professors.
Yeah.
Bob Bruno was my first professor of labor history when I was at University of Illinois.
That's interesting. You think that made a difference in your career trajectory?
Definitely, because I started out accounting and finance.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
And I took Bob's class, really sparked a passion in me, and then I had a business management class I was taking, and you know, after class, I'm like, where do the employees come in this cycle? And she's like, oh, you don't have to worry about them. They're a disposable asset.
I was that, like, class is in the other building.
Yeah.
It's like a shack.
Yeah. So
that one's out back.
Yeah.
I didn't consult anybody in my family. I went into the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences.
That's awesome.
Transferred to Poli Sci right away.
That's awesome. Good for you.
But, you know, my next professor that I had was Marty Mallon.
Yeah.
At Chicago Kent.
Yeah.
And
he has since retired, correct?
He has since retired from Kent. I believe he's still working for FMCS.
Okay.
But he kind of took me into that next level and helped spark a further passion in me in labor law.
Yeah.
And then working for Dale Pearson at the operating engineers, you know, he is a professor. He was an adjunct professor, I think, at NIU.
Yeah.
But he teaches through anecdotes. He's a lifelong professor.
If he's talking, he's teaching.
Yes.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
And I don't know if it's my way of giving back or that's just how I feel most comfortable explaining things to people, but I just love teaching.
Yeah.
And as an adjunct for this program, it allows me to scratch that itch that I have without making, you know, a full-time commitment or a full career change.
And you think your students get a lot out of it? Like having, because you're young. Like, how old are you?
32.
Okay. And how old is Joe?
34.
Yeah, okay. But you guys are young, right? And you're not like the typical professor, you know, et cetera. You don't look like the typical professor. You're young, both, you know, young guys. How does that, like, work in these classes?
Yeah, well, you just don't wear a tweed jacket, and I think that they...
You don't carry a pipe.
But do you relate better to people? Do you think they relate better to you? What do you think?
I like to think so, because I'm not just, you know, a suit that goes to court every single day. Like,
yeah.
I'm also boots on the ground.
Right.
Teaching from experience.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not just regurgitating something that you read in a book.
And it sounds like you're passionate about it.
Yeah.
I am passionate about it.
Yeah. Like, you're not just like going to work to collect a paycheck. Like, I can't imagine this thing pays you very well.
It pays me well enough.
enough.
Oh, you mean the teaching?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That's what I'm saying. Like this radio show.
But at the end of the day, knowledge is power.
Yeah.
And if you have a more educated representative at your union that's representing you, or if you have a worker come in, they're more educated on the job, they can spot issues in the workplace that, you know, they can be a guiding light for someone who might be experiencing some unlawful conduct.
Union or not union.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, listen, I've talked to... I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that have taken that class. Some of my stewards from 150, you know, I think Candace Maris from 150 was the secretary there, you know, took the class.
Passionate,
you know,
about it.
Yeah, a lot of it. You'd be surprised how many people have gone through that class, and nobody says anything bad about it. Like, it's always been useful. Like, really, as opposed to taking, like, you know, I took, I don't know, whatever, blank number of labor law classes in school. I think I'd get more out of that class that you're teaching for six Sundays than I did with two semesters of labor law, to be blunt with you.
Yeah,
you know, learning about, you know, the case law and things like that. So we got to wrap this up. Where do people go again to register for this class?
Google University of Illinois Labor Law Certificate.
Okay.
Or if you're on Facebook, go to the Workers Mic page and we'll have a link to the program posted there.
And it starts November 2nd.
November 2nd.
Saturday.
Yes.
No time to waste.
Couple of days before the election.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
It's a big deal. Listen, thank you so much, Jim Connolly, for coming on.
Good to see you.
Yeah, really good to see
you.
Yeah, I haven't seen you in a while. And thanks for what you're doing. I think it's really important. So
yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, happy 2 years to the workers, Mike.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Did you bring a present?
Yeah, here's a stick of gum.
I'll take it.
You need it. We'll be right back with more of the Workers Mike right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. That was pretty cool, huh?
That was very cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's good to see young people getting involved in labor and doing, you know, labor needs every job, right? They need accountants. Yeah. They need lawyers. They need worker bees. They need everything. We got to wrap it up. I want to just say a couple of quick things. One is, you know, obviously the election's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had talked about it last week. We're not overly political here. Everybody knows that. But the Labor's put something out that talks about Project 2025, which is basically, you know, hell on earth in 900 pages. And it does a couple of things. I'm going to tick them off.
Mm-hmm.
On page 604, and you can read this. Just go read it.
It
repeals Davis-Bacon, which is prevailing wage on construction.
The minimum wage for construction workers.
Big deal for us.
Huge deal.
Okay. Page 365, it repeals the bipartisan infrastructure bill. You know what? That has created massive, massive amounts of work for our members. Massive. And I mean, absolutely massive. You want to repeal that? That just,
We don't need bridges.
Page 604. Project labor agreements repeals them, bans them,
mm-hmm.
right? Those are where you agree not to strike, labor peace, working on a project, labor and management get together, and is sort of a little bit...
Hire local workers, hire trained workers, set some thresholds for their workforce.
Yep. Page 594, reinstate industry-registered apprenticeships. IRAPs.
Yeah.
Remember those?
It was something that happened in the Trump administration that would water down the training programs, water down the skill, water down the safety, and ultimately drive down wages for construction workers once again.
Yeah, because of these basically fake apprentice programs.
And I mean, what's the point of all this? Because workers are making too much money, so we have to create a more unsafe, more low-quality construction industry because these people want our money.
Yeah. No, it is literally about driving the middle class out of existence and having a total autocracy / plutocracy. So I don't know what you want to call it, but it's basically going to be very, 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 very rich and everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so, and then there's a couple other things on here, but you can read it. We got to wrap it up, right?
Yes, we do. It's been a great show.
We'll be back next week with more of The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mic, visit WGNradio.com.